Aikawarazu, and welcome to Shift F1, a podcast about speedy race cars. That, by the way, is Japanese for together, unchanging, which is a phrase meaning roughly the same as ever, just like Max Verstappen winning races, and just like this podcast, because Danny O'Dwyer is back. How are you, Danny?
I'm good. Look, it took Carlos Sainz, what, was it 10 days or something from getting an organ removed to getting back in the saddle? And I was full of piss and I was so confident that when I got my organ taken out that I would be like, I'm going to be Sainz-like jumping back in the seat. But, you know, my body just needed a little bit more time. I'm not quite as athletic as that beautiful Spaniard. But I'm here. I'm doing all right. I did just wake up from a nap, so I'm still recovering a little bit. But it's been great listening to a Shift F1 the past few weeks. I'm going to miss that this week. I don't tend to listen when I've already been on the show.
Also joining us, Rob Zachney. How are you, Rob?
You know, delighted, not surprised, but old school F1 strategy race.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah. I was trying to think what are my initial feelings about this race, and I was like, felt comfortable, felt familiar, you know?
This to me is F1.
Yes. Especially in Suzuka. Something about it Suzuka as well makes it feel like, ooh, yes, 2003, you know, ooh, 95, you know, it's like very familiar. Hasn't changed much this circuit, you know?
If you're new to this podcast, a very warm welcome to you. And if you are new to Formula One itself, we recommend listening to our preseason primer episode, which assumes no prior F1 knowledge and explains how the sport works and who everybody is. So if you'd like to go back and listen to that, it's episode 257. Also, this show would not be possible without our audience over at patreon.com/shiftf1, where every month we release an ad-free version of the podcast, along with bonus podcasts and videos exclusively for our patrons that cover racing documentaries and films, F1 video games, experiments with other racing series, and a lot of weird things. So if you would like to support the show and get access to all that fun stuff, head over to patreon.com/shiftf1 or click the link in the show notes. What's going on this month, Danny?
Yeah, we already posted the second part of our Drive to Survive season review. Last month, episodes 1 and 1, 2, 5, 1 through 5. We didn't skip 3 and 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 were covered. And then, I'm not still on pain meds. And then last week, I'd already, I guess, packaged it ahead of time. So last week, it got posted. The second part to that, episodes 6 through 10, went up on Thursday of last week. So that has all been, it's all been Drive to Survive it. And I'll be honest, over the years, when we've done the Drive to Survive season reviews, which we have done for every season of Drive to Survive, some of them have felt a bit like homework. Like, I guess we've got to do it. But we were all excited to do this one, and there was plenty to talk about. So if you want to listen to the whole package, you can do so now over at patreon.com/shiftf1. Also, a massive thanks to all of our incredible, incredible title sponsors. Excuse me. Must have a bit of hair in my mouth there, because who's here but Mansell's Mustache, Get Rich or Die Ryan, Agave ATX, Cyphus Training, Turf SCS, At Team Blackjack, Michael Maves, Gordy's Army, At Talking Autos, TelemetryDeck.com, FTC, Drew Stewart, Bailey Foote, Abdullah Althani, Jason Chadwick, Abraham Getchell, The Space Above Us Podcast, Buddy Crimes is Tired of Being Audited, Sniggs, Alex Goucher, Max Voltar, Circuit Demon, Troy Stammer, William Rompf, Irvine Clinical Research, big fan of California-based clinical research these days. Lachlan the Madden Man, Samurai Love Story, appropriate, and Jason Kelly. Thank you all so much, and thanks to all of our incredible patrons and listeners and everyone who sent very kind messages over the past couple of weeks. And mostly, thank you to Drew and Rob, who were immediately able to jump on and say, "Danny, don't worry about it. We'll take care of the podcast. Nobody wants you on the show anyway. We've got this. It's all good." I really appreciate it, guys. But I am glad to be back, very much so.
Of course, our pleasure. Well, let's jump right into the Japanese Grand Prix, shall we? A rain-soaked free practice 2.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, packed stands. That is what you get.
They're great.
In Japan.
They're great. Aren't they great? The other thing you get is a lot of like sincerely apologetic messages saying things like, "I took off work to be here," or sorry, teacher, I skipped school to be here today. Like, they're so sweet. Like, there's no, you know, nothing crass, nothing particularly, you know, abrasive, just like very sincere, nice messages from all these fantastic Japanese fans.
Also, it felt like this, you know, maybe obviously the camera people hunt out cute families and such, but it felt like there were more kids and families at this event than I've like ever seen at an F1 race. And I think my only thought is, with them shifting the calendar, did they move it into Japanese spring break?
Nice.
Which I think might be in their school system, like the bigger break.
Right.
So that like you could, more families could take the time to go do this. 'Cause it was striking how many like families and little kids were there, which was incredibly adorable.
And striking how many of those amazing hats that they just keep producing, those hats with the front wings on them or rear wings are just absolutely
tiny little driver plushies.
Yeah.
I saw one that said, respect to all 20 drivers, and arrayed around the hat were 20 helmets.
Oh my God, look
tiny
at that.
Helmets.
Even Lance Stroll is getting representation in Japan. That's incredible. Yeah, they're just great fans, and it's just a fun circuit too. It's just every time you go there, you're like, man, it's a weird track. It's got like a little figure of eight going on, kind of. You kind of forget it's there because you don't really notice going under the track or over it. With the different time of the year as well, so it was interesting to see how much the weather would play a factor, but I guess rain has always been a thing in Suzuka, you know, over the years, to tragic effect some years, and in more recent years near tragic effect as well, with that the crazy year we had with the spray and the vehicle that was on track. It was also the 10th race since Jules Bianchi's crash as well. Not quite 10 years because of the change of the time of year that the track is on, but it was crazy to think that, you know. I still remember that evening watching it with a bunch of must have been alt F1 folks online, and how crazy and terrible and tragic that evening was. And it's nuts to think it was 10 years ago, but also amazing to think how many times we have spoken on this very podcast about how that halo, man, glad that halo was there, you know, over the years. So gone but never forgotten, Jules Bianchi.
Yeah, certainly not, because Charles Leclerc raced a tribute helmet this weekend with Bianchi's number, because he is his godfather and general what is the word for
friend?
the person who guides you through
mentor?
Life.
Mentor.
That's mentor. What I'm looking for. There we go. But yeah, let's get to the grid.
There's a Japanese word for
sorry.
For sure.
Senpai.
Thank you. There we go.
The grid, everyone. Max Verstappen is on top pole position, followed by Sergio Perez, his Red Bull Racing Honda, or Red Bull Powertrains teammate. Third place, Lando Norris, or as I like to call him when he's in Japan, Lando Nori.
Oh, nice. Okay, yeah.
Carlos Sainz in
fourth. Can we do the whole grid?
Carlos Sainz in fourth, Fernando Alonso in fifth, Oscar Piastri sixth, Lewis Hamilton seventh, Charles Leclerc in eighth. Bit of a surprise there. He did one run in Q3 between everyone else's runs. Not sure why they did that, but it doesn't get him any higher than seventh to start. George Russell lines up ninth, and then Yuki Tsunoda in 10th. 11th is Ricardo, who was knocked out by Tsunoda.
Yes, he was. That was
getting into Q3.
You heard every time Daniel's dancing with a comeback. Every time it seems like he's about to do it. It's like, ooh.
Yeah.
I felt that was a real statement. I mean, he's qualified him. Yuki's qualified him in every race, but I think that in particular, knocking him right at, he was like the last car as well through and into Q3, and that was a bit rough.
Yeah. 12th, Nico Hülkenberg, followed by Valtteri Bottas, Alex Albon, Esteban Ocon in 15th, through to Q2 for the second race running for the Alpine driver. Lance Stroll, 16th, 11 positions behind his teammate. Worth noting, though, that he was the only one running Aston Martin's new upgrades, which, you know, can either help or hurt you.
Lance Roll, maybe? Like a spring roll, summer roll? Lance Roll? Yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
good.
We got one.
Pierre Gasly in 17th, Kevin Magnussen 18th, Logan Sargeant 19th, crashed again in practice.
Did, yeah, big one. Practice one on the first day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a real tank slapper as well. It was a, you know, Williams are fucking praying to the old gods and the new that they can get through this part of the season without destroying all their cars.
Yeah, he was running the new upgrades, but because he crashed, they had reverted to the old ones. So, sorry. And then Zhou Guanyu lines up 20th. Danny, do you want to take us through the start?
Sure, yeah. The start of the race. God, I forgot I do this part. lights out, away they go. Everyone briefly looks at Sergio Perez to see if he gets a better start than Max, which would be surprising. He doesn't. They all sort of file through that first turn pretty much in order with a decent amount of space. The action that we get here is on the approach into turn two, where we have one of those classic three into two does not go situations with, I guess, the people who were affected worst were Ricardo and Albon. The third car kind of in the mixer there was our spring roll friend, Lance Stroll. He was on the outside of turn one, as they're sort of, which will be the inside of turn two, I guess. Ricardo's in the middle of the track, and to his right is attempting to overtake Alexander Albon, who's had a nice little start up the inside of turn one. And yeah, it's both a racing incident, nobody's at fault, and also one of you guys should have known not to be there. Who is it? It's to me, it's probably Albon. Like he probably, if he's racing conservatively, he doesn't try and put himself up the outside there, because like it's kind of inevitable. But you know, I don't think it's his fault, but you know, it's also he had some agency in the situation and he ended up in the wall.
I kind of feel like that Williams car does not seem very good. It does not seem like the form that they were enjoying last year, where Albon was like routinely pulling it up into the points. That doesn't seem to be the case this year. To me, it felt a little bit like, because Ricardo had kind of a dodgy start, which I think was because Tsunoda also had a dodgy start, so he got a little balked in there. But like, it felt like one of those things where Albon was trying to be a first lap hero, because that is probably where the Williams is going to get its business done if anything's going to happen that day. But I'm with you. Like, if any, like, Ricardo's in the middle there, he doesn't actually have, like, literally, he had no room to maneuver, right? He would have had to keep the thing on rails and not react to either car on either side. Albon is the one who did have the option to back out of that, but I can see why he didn't. He had such a good run coming out of one. That, like, it certainly felt like he could do the overtake. So I understand why he forced the issue. It's just, you know, you are really running the risk of exactly that kind of incident. I guess you could also argue, did Ricardo kind of react to a phantom Aston? Stroll wasn't actually coming up the inside that much.
Yeah, there's the argument that he was looking in his left mirrors, so that he was more, which makes sense because he had made that turn looking at Stroll, so he doesn't necessarily know what's happening up the inside. But he's also taking the racing line, you know what I mean? Like he's moving across the track in a way that you would to try and get up. It's a hill, you know, and it's a sort of a you're screwed both ways situation as well, because if Albon hits the brakes there, it's really hard to just brake and not get gobbled up by everyone who's right behind you as well. So it's an unfortunate place for it to happen as well. There's zero, it's all uphill into gravel, zero runoff. Yeah. There's the wall right there. So they, you know,
went in hard.
Both of them, they sort of collected each other in the crash as well, but thankfully both of them got out. But it meant those barriers were super messed up, so the red flags came out pretty much immediately.
Yeah, it looked to me like Albon's front wing punctures Ricardo's rear right.
Yeah.
Which is why Ricardo spun. And then by then, Albon is on the grass, so he just continues into the barriers. But yeah, red flag, restart. Do you want to take us through the restart, Danny?
Sure.
Standing restart.
Yeah, they did a standing restart. It took a little while. Maybe it was 25 minutes, something like that. Which when you're on the, I mean, I guess it's worse if you're on the East Coast, but when you're on the West Coast, you're staying up for this race. You're sort of used to red flags or safety cars in Suzuka, and it's stretching past midnight. Because the race, I think it starts at, it was 10:05 over here, which is cool. A novelty on a Saturday evening. But the race started up again. this time everyone's 2x2, like Good Little Animals, getting on the arc. Verstappen gets out ahead again. By the end of the halfway through the first lap, he's already managed to stretch out a pretty big gap on Perez. And I don't know if there was any other overtake in
well, Hulkenberg has a terrible restart.
Okay.
Just gets swamped. And Ocon and Gasly, I think we saw this in the replay.
Oh, they did.
They
yes.
made contact off the line, and that apparently caused a loss of downforce for both cars for the rest of the race.
Oh, really? Wow, yeah.
It was, I forget, who was... Gasly was flinching to avoid someone else, if memory serves. Like, he had to react... No, I think it was that, was it because of the Hulkenberg bad start? He was, like, swinging around so aggressively.
Yeah, they were right beside each other, yeah.
Yeah, because, like, you had a sitting duck car in front of you, basically. So you have that thing where the car kind of lurches sideways a bit more than you want. I guess, you know, the big thing that for me, the big thing that was, like, sort of notable about the restart was the sheer number of people who went on the hards to stretch it out.
Yeah, because in the red flag, you get to do basically a free tire change.
Yeah, and I think it was pretty clear early on that Mercedes were going to try Hail Mary. They were going to try, and you know, there were a lot of teams trying the hard. I think Alpine did as well, right? But Mercedes was going to try to, like, basically because they had started, I think, on the mediums, they had met their tire requirement, and they were going to try and just, you know, make one stop over the course of the race and see if those hards held up, which is ambitious given that your restart is on lap two. But it felt like the kind of risk you have to run. Again, a bit like Albon, you know, raw pace is not in your favor.
Desperate times.
This kind of felt like Mercedes running an idea up the flagpole and see what happens.
Well, indeed, because of the, well, either because of the damage or because he's in an Alpine, Gasly does get passed by Tsunoda around the outside in the S's, which is a real cool move, an unlikely place to pass.
It's not the only time he does it either. He just loves the fans there. He's just like, watch this shit. I'm going to do it up a hill. Around the outside. Suzuka's a tight track. It's a bike track, basically. So Suzuka's not, like, there's not many parts of this track that are particularly wide.
No.
So it's
but people find places to pass. It's kind of wild.
Like there. Yeah, good spot.
Yeah. We get some interesting messages from Hamilton suggesting, hey, do I need to let Russell by? And we learned after the race, apparently, that Hamilton damaged one of his front wing end plates when he and Leclerc touched at turn three on the restart. That resulted in a lot of understeer for Hamilton, which his team tried to correct with an adjustment when he pitted. But indeed, Mercedes does have the two swap on lap 14. Hamilton is compromised from then on. Norris gets by him on lap 17 around the outside of turn one in another gutsy move. And then gets Russell a lap later for third. Gutsier still, though, Perez passing Hamilton on the same lap down the inside of 130R. Then doing the same thing to Russell one lap later.
But I'd be honest, but definitely on the first one, I puckered up a bit. I was like, oh, I don't know, Chico. Is that where you want to do it? Like, you're coming up to that little chicane at the top of the hill. That's usually a good spot. Although maybe Russell proves his point later. Maybe it's not that easy a place to do it. Yeah, I guess 130R, it's always weird, right? It always depends on the cars. Like, this year, they're able to take a flat out no problem. So it's less of a freaky turn. But yeah, just it's not fun. It's not fun watching it. You know, when you know the weight of 130R, you're like, ooh. But yeah, he made it look easy. And maybe it was because he's in a Red Bull.
Sainz was the next one to get both the Mercedes on lap 19 and 21. Russell running wide at turn 11. Between those, though, Verstappen gets by Leclerc, who is running long on the medium tires that he put on for the restart and into the lead. So Leclerc is trying... kind of what we mentioned to Mercedes, but with a different strategy. He's trying to go as long as possible on the medium and then switch one time to hard Well, it would be the second time, including the red flag.
Was a really, it's really singular strategy. Nobody else tries this at this race. Like lots of people went to the medium. It was closer to the tire of choice for the race, but yeah, he really made that thing work in a way that none of the hard tire runners were happy with how the strategy played out. Most people bailed out. I forget, was it when Sainz went by or was it when Perez that Hamilton gets on the radio and says, change the strat.
Yeah,
it's not working. And for the most part, it seems like it did. That strategy did kind of tank for everybody. Now, whether the medium just in those conditions had more life in it, hard to say. But Leclerc made executing that strategy look pretty easy.
He did. One lap later, though, his Verstappen's teammate Perez gets by Norris into third place.
On the chicane, right?
On the chicane, yes. Yeah. Perez looking strong in this race.
Yeah, he had a solid drive. He had an errorless drive, let's say, which
yeah.
When you're in that car and you're not good enough to be as good as Max, that's pretty much perfect. That's what they want you there for.
Yeah,
just don't fuck up. Good job.
There is actually one driver who did the same strategy as Leclerc, went from medium to medium during the red flag and then one stop to hard, and that is Kevin Magnussen. This ended up bunching up five cars in the midfield.
Oh, my God.
Who then all pitted at the same time.
This was hilarious. It's like the game broke. Like, yeah. They all did the same AI or something. And yeah. Was it Yuki who came out, who jumped yes. all of them or something?
Yeah, he capitalized, so jumped two spots, I believe, into 11th place behind Hülkenberg on track.
You know who was not confident they were going to skip everyone on that pit stop? Was Valtteri Bottas.
No,
but in fairness to them, I watched because I was just like sat up doing nothing for the past 3 weeks. I watched all of practice and quali live as well. And the amount of pit stop practices that fucking team did, I swear to God. Maybe the heat here helped them though. You know what I mean? It wasn't like sweltering like it has been. And apparently that's one of the issues they've had with the guns. Mm. But they had some solid 4 second, stops. Okay. This weekend, you know,
better than eight.
Yeah,
in a sport where like two and a half is the standard. yep. But you're right; it is better than them seizing the wheel, basically. I don't know. It's tough to say how it would have gone. We forgot to mention because they're so rarely relevant. Zhou going out fairly early. But it feels to me like. If not for Sauber throwing away a number of good drives for Valtteri, he's actually having a low-key tremendous season in a car that does not seem very good.
And also, like he has become a character. Like he is becoming late-stage Alonso. Did you see that? I think I wasn't around. Did you see that Australia? The commercial he did.
Oh my God, the Uber commercial?
For Uber. That was like, that was incredible. So unbelievable. Genuinely hilarious. He looks the part. Like, also, he looks ridiculous in that commercial, but like, that's just who he is now.
That's what he looks like.
And also, his team wears neon green too, so it's not that far. So, you know, he is gambling Twitch. Like, that is his sponsor at the moment, is off-brand Twitch. So, yeah, I think he's loving it, man. He's loving life right now. Valtteri's loving life.
Yeah, I'll put
You know, when he gets to get his... the only problem is when he gets his tires changed, like getting his fucking oil changed. But, you know, aside from that, he's doing all right.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find that commercial and put it in the show notes. It's worth watching.
It's not.
Let's see, lap 33, Tsunoda catches up to Hülkenberg and with some great back and forth, ooh, does get by him in the S's like he did on Gasly and into the points at his home race for the very first time.
His happy place right there, that overtaking spot.
Yeah.
He rose to the occasion. Look, while we talk about his mentality over the past few years, guy got into Q3, he's in the points now. He's done great overtakes. You know, I don't know. I don't know if Danny Ricciardo is making him look better than he is, but I don't think Yuki's getting a Red Bull seat anytime soon either. I should qualify this because Red Bull are crazy. and expect so much, but yeah, he's doing it, man. He's doing his thing.
His performance is higher and the mistakes aren't really there. That's the big thing, right? Yes. Like he's gotten like notably better, it looks like, on Saturday and on Sunday. And then he's not shunting the car, semi-regularly. So you sort of see the two things. And, you know, they still make a deal out of his temperament. He's spoken about that a bit this year, I think. Just, like, trying to train himself out of, like, losing his shit on the radio a bit. And I think he has, kind of. Like, he's still testy, but seems like a person you're happier to open a comms channel to mid-race than in previous years. So, yeah, like, we've entered, like, you know, peak Yuki here.
And it couldn't happen at a better time, because there's always that feeling that the Honda relationship at Red Bull is partly why he's got that seat, right? So you're thinking, if that relationship is dissolving at the end of 25, right, that's when they have to have their own engine thing up. Yeah. maybe he's in a more vulnerable position there, I'm not sure, but yeah,
or maybe Honda tries to set him up with someone else they're supplying. I mean, yeah. I've heard there's no Aston Yuki rumors at all, but it wouldn't surprise me if they try to find him a ride.
Be very funny if Aston's two drivers were, you know, and I think the reason this doesn't come up a lot is because Yuki's also, he's doing the job, right? Like, he's this is no Pastor Maldonado situation, but paid driver or whatever. But it would be very funny if Aston was Yuki and Lance. It was just two drivers who were there out of some sort of nepotism or a national affiliation. Yeah, my two good drivers, you know?
Lance has gotten Yuki tendencies on the radio, if we're being honest. Like, low-key in a Canadian way, maybe, sure. But what was the radio message this week where he just starts, like, he sounded like he got Joker-fied, where he's like, it's like we're in a different category, man.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he did say that. And also Hamilton streets. Said during qualifying, where are they getting that half second from, in fairness? Like, both of them, I think, said it about the pace.
Yeah. This was, yes, that jumped out at me. I think it was in quali as well. I don't think I've ever heard so many drivers get on the radio sounding completely mystified about what, like, where the time gap is. They, like, genuinely zero idea for how the Red Bulls are doing it to them.
Well, I don't know how he does it, but Sargeant goes off track once again on lap 42. Hopefully for Williams, not
he's
doing
lieutenant
any...
now. They've demoted him.
Thank you. That would be a promotion,
see?
Danny.
That would be a promotion. Fuck! Yeah. Damn it! You can tell I'm not
private.
From a military country. You know,
private or corporal, I guess.
Corporal, private, okay.
yeah, hopefully not doing too much damage to that Williams. Lap 46 signs with some new tires. Certainly newer than Leclerc's, gets by Leclerc on the outside of turn one for the final podium spot with, what is that, 7 laps to go. And because we are entering the final stage of the race, Russell decides to pull some bold moves and dives down the inside of Piastri at the chicane, forcing him to drive off the track. It didn't work, but to me, it looked like, well, it looked like it had the makings of one of those moves that if it had worked, he would look like a genius.
I feel like this is Russell's MO, though, is kind of...
That's what I'm saying.
Fluffing up these, you know. I don't think he's good at this. I'm not saying overtaking in general, but the gutsy overtake, I think, is not his...
His racecraft is not good. Like, and that's the thing. His time at Williams concealed the vulnerabilities he had as a driver in a competitive race, because what he did at Williams was, like, drive beyond the level of the car and take a not very fast car just on pure pace into positions that it didn't have had no business being. And then at Mercedes, man, what has been exposed is this guy just doesn't have that sixth sense for when is the moment to strike. And he doesn't have, like, the, you know, risk calculator in his head that is, like, spitting out the exact, like, don't push it here, push it here. And so, yeah, that to me felt like another moment where, you know, we applaud the attempt. It's the sort of stuff we'd love to see from an F1 driver. George never turns these things into highlights, is the thing.
No. Yeah, and you look at, like, his teammate Hamilton, who obviously one of his great attributes is his ability to break under pressure in those situations. And that's what that overtake requires, is you to really break late, get your nose out in front, and then own that corner. And this is more of a, you know, he's like trying to get in front. I'm glad Piastri didn't crash into him. And also, I don't know, I guess maybe I'm watching this one close enough. If you're Perez, you can overtake there. Or if you're Perez or Verstappen, you can, you know, Verstappen doesn't have to overtake people. That's his problem. But if you're whoever, you can do it on 130R. Part of me was like, why aren't you just like setting them up for turn one? Like maybe the DRS train thing was happening. I don't know, but you know.
On the final lap, he closed up enough for DRS and does get Piastri on the main straight for seventh place.
Yeah, bit of a shame.
Required a Piastri error, though.
Which?
Sorry?
It required a Piastri error. Piastri got wide.
And that's right. Had a
bad,
yes.
They had a bad exit, which compromised them. Like, I do think the fundamentally the issue is the Mercedes, the way they're setting it up, I don't get the sense it has enough aerodynamic efficiency that if it's going to be a good driving car, that it's a very fast car in a straight line. Right. And I think that really shows up in the when they're trying to DRS overtake. And you just look at it, and it doesn't look like, you know, if you couldn't see it, would you think the DRS was open? Maybe right. not.
Hmm. Well, the race ends like this. Max Verstappen bringing it home in first. Behind him, Sergio Perez for a Red Bull 1-2. Perez 12.535 seconds behind. In third place, Carlos Sainz Jr. Rounding out the podium. Behind him, Charles Leclerc on that bold 1.5 step stop strategy.
Do we talk about when he went off in Digna 2? I forget about that. That was when Perez passed him. That happened too.
It was an exciting moment. Yeah. It was
because they were riding on board and was like, whoa, what's he doing?
That's right. Yeah. Lando Norris in fifth. Fernando Alonso 6th, George Russell 7th, Oscar Piastri 8th, Lewis Hamilton 9th, Yuki Tsunoda in 10th place gets a point at his home race. Behind him, we've got Nico Hülkenberg, Lance Stroll, Kevin Magnussen, Valtteri Bottas, Esteban Ocon in 15th, Pierre Gasly, and Logan Sargeant. Then the DNFs of Zhou Guan Yu, who again went out with a gearbox problem, Daniel Ricciardo, and Alex Albon, who crashed on the opening lap.
No, it wasn't. You got to answer for that weaving Magnussen was doing on the straight.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Did he get a penalty?
Oh, yeah. You didn't let you pass right over that, didn't you? You don't want to talk about K-Mag pulling classic K-Mag maneuvers. Just like doing S's like he's heating the tires down the road.
Did he get a penalty for it?
No.
He didn't? Okay.
He did not.
I think they allowed
no harm, no foul.
Generous interpretation of allowing a defensive move and then reestablishing the racing line. But the shot you saw on TV sure looked like he was doing S's.
All right, that is it for the Japanese Grand Prix. We are going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with the news. Rob, speaking of aerodynamics... what's going on with future regulations?
Well, Autosport had an interesting story this week. I'm not sure, it may have been an exclusive, given how often they mentioned sources have told Autosport. But apparently a number of teams did simulation runs of proposed designs for the 2026 regulations, and in particular the shift toward active aerodynamics. Active aerodynamics, the simplest example would be like a bit like the way DRS works, where you have the wing at one plane and then it snaps open and reduces the drag. That's sort of an active aerodynamic system. Usually you see it a lot in like performance EVs, which are trying to be very, very efficient. If you've ever seen a car that like once it achieves a certain speed, like a spoiler pops out of out of the trunk lid, effectively, that's an example of active aerodynamics. You don't want that drag there if you do not need it for cornering or grip. So if the car is just going in a straight line, it recedes and like goes flush with the rest of the car and
it's like,
becomes
it's
very
like
efficient.
Pulling your flaps in or something after takeoff.
exactly. So this is one of the ways that F1 is going to be changing the rules up. It's going to make the cars a little more efficient, a little bit faster on the sort of redone regs on how the power is going to put down. The idea was they would have active arrow, especially at the rear wing, and the early tests of how F1 proposed this working were catastrophically bad for the proposed system. The Autosport article is well worth reading because it sounds really fascinating. It sounds like a disaster, but like kind of the disaster you want to see from sim data at this stage. But basically, like, numerous drivers reported the car being undrivable when the aero had receded into like low drag mode, like not even drivable in a straight line. Driving within the limit, the cars were posting speeds that were not Formula 2 grade. Now the plan is one of the early findings that seems to have been drawn from this is that it hasn't killed active aero, but it's sort of forced a rethink of how it might work. The plan was for it to be basically centered on the rear wing, because that's usually where you see active aero systems. It's where it's easier to sort of integrate with existing sort of design architecture. But the theory of why the cars behaved so poorly was that they became really unbalanced once the rear aero kind of disappeared, and that was contributing to their squirreliness, was that you just had really different performance characteristics coming from the nose and tail of the car. So the solution is you balance whatever's happening at the rear by having active aero at the front, which is cool. But I know what active aero looks like when you talk about a rear wing. That's very easy to imagine. Active aero for a front wing is a little bit harder to really grok. Like, we see examples of like adjustable front wing that, you know, drivers being able to adjust it like on the move. I think IndyCar you could do that for years. You could sort of dial in your front wing while you were racing. But I don't know, like, I have a hard time thinking about like what does a front end active aero system look like. Flexi wing, that, you know, that's one way to do it. That's not really active though. So I'm very curious, like, what the imagined solution is for that. Cause like, think about the front of an F1 car. What parts do you see easily moving?
Yeah. And drag is different,
sort of,
right?
Balance it.
Cause the front of an F1 car, like, you know, if you drive I drive a Jeep, right? You want to talk about some drag, right? I drive a cube down the road, right? Every car requires, any race car requires something in the front, you know, to basically reduce drag as quickly as possible. The rear wing is not necessarily, I'm no aerodynamicist, but like the rear wing is there for like a different reason than for that. It's attempting to either push the car down or whatever it is, while also trying to reduce drag. Whereas like front wing aero design is presumably much more about spreading the air so that whatever it's doing afterwards is the issue. You know what I mean? So
primarily it steers the air. And yes, there's a lot of like front end grip that comes from the front, but yeah, primarily it is there to sort of contour the air toward wherever it's going to go and how it's going to flow over the rest of the car. So yeah, I'm trying to imagine like what active aero in the front looks like. You know, are we going to see the little like front wings like opening and closing like, you know, blinds almost as those vanes sort of snap open and close? I don't know. I imagine it looked pretty goofy. But I'm kind of intrigued by it. But also, right now it sounds like F1's put this marker down. We're gonna lean hard on active aero, and the early results are it sucks for F1.
Counterpoint: what if they all looked like F14 Tomcats?
Oh, nice. Yeah, I was thinking Jason the Wheel Warriors, where they just completely transform into a different type of car. But that also works.
I would love a swing wing.
Yeah.
F1 car, like side pods, just that sort of like switchblade out, and god damn, that'd be great.
VTOL,
yeah. Yeah,
we're just one more. That's the step away from Wipeout. That's it. We just figured it out.
Everyone's just racing Harriers. Yeah, I'm very curious to see. I don't know. You're right, Rob. I don't know what it looks like, but I want to see it. Danny, what's our next story here?
Bit of scuttlebutt around Sebastian Vettel. You know, we just can't help ourselves. It's one of those years. We're gonna have drivers bouncing all over the place, and when you're talking about 13, the driver market,
I think 13 drivers seats are gonna be up for grabs.
It's excellent. Love to see it. And who knows? Maybe someone will get kicked out. Lots of shuffling around the teams. Maybe somebody comes in. Maybe a rookie. Maybe not a rookie. Maybe an old guy. Although he's 2 years younger than me, which really annoys me. Sebastian Vettel, all 36 years of him. You know, bees are fun, but bees can get boring. And in a recent interview...
So can your family, I guess.
So can your family. Your kids are growing up. They've got their own stuff going on there. They don't really care. Dad, I don't care about the bees. Stop talking about the bees. God, not the bees. Killing me won't bring back your goddamn honey. You know, normal things you say to your children. In a recent interview with a radio station, which I thought was in Cyberpunk, but apparently is actually a real radio station called Radio X in the UK, of course he was asked about possibly coming back to the sport, and there were some interesting quotes. Let me read some. I'm following the sport. I see what's going on, and it, aka a return, might be appealing and interesting, but it really depends on the full package, because it is a big commitment as well, with all the other stuff going on outside the driving activity. The bees, I'm guessing he's referring to there. To seriously consider, it would be very much depend on the package. From an age point of view, I feel bloody young, which is a great term I've never heard, with all the guys that are still hanging around and signing big contracts being around for longer. It looks like I could have another 10 years in the sport, so I'm definitely ahead of them in terms of keeping fit. I've had conversations with him. This was a question asked about if he's talked to Toto Wolff. I've had conversations with him, not really about the seat. We did speak about the whole situation in short as well. So maybe they were talking about, you know, Bundesliga or, you know...
Helldivers,
bees, so many things. So I'm staying in touch. I don't know. It has to be a couple more phone calls and conversations, I guess, to really find out a little bit more. But for sure, Mercedes is one of the best seats on the grid. So... who knows? He's throwing his hand in the ring. He's putting the feeler out there. He's thinking about it. I'd like to see Seb come back. It is a very Schumacher-esque move to do, you know, and talk about his sensei or whatever. Hopefully he would have a better run of it than Schumi did on his return to the sport. But yeah, I wouldn't begrudge Sebastian coming back with either of you. Or is there any other driver? Is there any other driver you pine for? Are you secretly hoping that Nico Rosberg turns up again?
Romain Grosjean, get him back. I would love to see Vettel back in the car. I'd love to see him go back to Red Bull and win four more championships.
That'd be great. Yeah. Would it be?
Yeah, I love that, because by the end, we all loved Sebastian Vettel. He became one of, like, the nicest guys on the grid.
He did, yeah.
Certainly one of the few with sort of a more global perspective, sort of awareness of the world beyond motorsports. But it also felt like his time was past. And this interview kind of feels like... I haven't heard a lot of other people saying this, right? The only person I've seen talk about Vettel's comeback prospects is Lewis Hamilton. Talking about, like, you know, he thinks it'd be awesome. But I would also say that about a friend. And I think by the end they were quite good friends, and so you're gonna talk up your buddy. But I don't feel like in all the theory crafting of how these seats might play out, I do not feel like Sebastian's stock is particularly high, you know, given the vacancies.
It also seems like he's not really racing much. You know, outside of F1, he's not doing much. Yeah. I did a bit of research prior to this, and it didn't seem like he's, you know, which I guess is the whole point. So,
but Alonso is everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. But Alonso, nobody wants to hire Alonso because he's a crazy man. We love him.
Even though this race was like one of his five greatest races.
Alonso's?
After the, yeah, this is...
Is that what he said himself?
Oh, dude, it's vintage Alonso. He did this all the time at McLaren too, where he would be like, "I just drove the greatest race of my life. Nobody will know because the car's not good." But like that was. I'll put this above, you know, all the races I won with Renault and Ferrari.
Wow.
He is constantly saying like, "I just painted a masterpiece."
Amazing.
And everyone's like, "P6, bro," and he's like, "Look upon it and despair."
Be your own biggest fan.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Well, speaking of big fans, who's big fans of Ben Suliam, Rob?
When prompted.
a lot of member clubs of the FIA who sort of... We had the whole, like, allegations that he intervened inappropriately in a couple, like, FIA rulings.
This is the president of the FIA. Mohammed Ben Suliam.
And then the FIA investigated and cleared the FIA. and then in the wake of this, a number of member clubs have recommended that the FIA take like legal action effectively against people who were slandering the organization.
Wow.
And Ben Suliam. Now, the problem I have, well, there's a number of problems. One is this just continues the saga we are in of the FIA being in the news for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Like, this is not, like, just let it pass. This feels a little bit like, it feels like of a piece with Susie Wolf exploring, like, legal remedies over, you know, the allegation, the investigation that was raised and very quickly dismissed. Against her, this kind of feels like a tit for tat. Like, well, then, you know, maybe we should launch an investigation or a lawsuit against the people who've unfairly maligned Ben Suliam. But the other problem is, this also feels 100% like a thing he would organize. This doesn't seem like a bunch of people rallying around this beloved figure, because we know he does this shit. We know he tried to get Max Verstappen to go and like give a big vote of confidence to Christian Wolff. Like, this is his playbook. Is like, you know what? You don't change this. Is a big public statement of support. Yeah, really, I'll call out your enemies.
I'll make some phone calls. He's like, everyone's talking about you right now, and his wife is like, nobody's talking about you. Please, just go to bed. Please, go to bed. And he's like, no, we need to address this. We need to. The whole world needs to know that I'm on the level. Just please go to bed. It's late.
And the list of member clubs that were like behind this. I mean, the FIA is by its nature, it's kind of a big organization, but you might expect, one suspects that there are some member clubs that are real like powerhouses, right? Like,
yeah,
in the FIA,
the UK.
The list here is largely like Latin America and like the Bahamas.
Okay, so ones that maybe might need a bit more money next year, you know, when the finances are done.
Yeah, it's tough to
I've
say.
I've seen that FIFA documentary. I know how this shit works.
I don't know enough about like the motivations for like what, like, you know, what does the Uruguayan chapter of the FIA, like, what is the reciprocity that it would get from like supporting a given chairman? But it just seems odd, right? Because you look at this list and the parties that do not appear are some of the major like auto producing and auto enthusiast countries in the world, so that's the other part of it, is like it's kind of an odd array of chapters lining up in support.
It sort of puts into focus the people who aren't letting their support them.
Right.
Yeah, I also Rob, if you have the article open, maybe read the second to last paragraph for maybe someone else's angle on why they might support.
The list also interestingly includes the signature of Fabiana Ecclestone, the vice president of South America for sports, who is also wife of former F1 Supremo Bernie Ecclestone. She has emerged as a potential future presidential candidate potentially as early as the next election in 2025, depending on whether or not Ben Sulayem opts to seek a mandate for a second term in charge.
And then that means that his, like, what, three-year-old son now maybe at this stage? Not to, maybe then he'll be, like, the sort of last emperor situation. He'll be, like, the new FIA sort of baby ruler, you know?
I feel like if Fabiana Ecclestone becomes, like, head of the FIA, it's time to roll it up.
She can't even stop her husband walking through the Sao Paulo airport without a fucking gun in his pocket. She can't run Formula One. Come on.
Or embroiling, like, dozens of people and businesses in lawsuits because of what he said on an interview.
Hey, he doesn't remember doing the interview. It's fine.
Yeah.
He had an adrenochrome appointment.
The second
that
he gets
day.
In trouble, I have no recollection of that. I'm all
right. Well, all right. Well, at the end of the Japanese Grand Prix, the driver standings look like this. Max Verstappen is on top with 77 points. Sergio Perez with 64. Charles Leclerc in third with 59. Carlos Sainz in fourth with 55. In fifth place, we've got Norris with 37. Piastri with 32. Russell with 24. Tied with Fernando Alonso. Hamilton has 10. And in 10th place, we've got Stroll with 9 points. Behind him, we've got Tsunoda with 7. Oliver Bearman still's got 6 points. Nico Hülkenberg has 3, and Kevin Magnussen has 1. In 15th through 21st, we've got, with 0 points, Albon, Zhou, Ricciardo, Ocon, Gasly, Bottas, and Sargeant. In the constructor standings, Red Bull Racing is on top with 141 points. Ferrari has 120. McLaren is in 3rd with 69 points.
Nice.
Mercedes is in 4th with 34. 1 point ahead of Aston Martin in 5th with 33.
Ouch.
RB is in 6th with 7. Gene Haas and team is in 7th with 4 points. And then Williams, Sauber, and Alpine all have 0.
Come on, Haas.
If you would like to join the standings yourself, you can join our official Shift F1 Fantasy League. It has been renamed from a big old string of numbers into Shift F1 Podcast.
Okay.
With no plus, they wouldn't allow me to put a plus in there.
Look, man, as somebody with an apostrophe in their fucking name, I get it. I get it. I feel your pain.
We have branding
every
to
time
consider.
I book
Danny.
A hotel or get on a plane. Yeah.
We have for the Japanese Grand Prix a 10-way tie.
Oh,
are you ready?
Garden. It's like the pits. It's like the pits when they all went in at the same time.
Yes. I'm looking out the commentary box. I see team 1710798308458 7.
Wow, what a great name.
Yeah,
that's actually a Hitler reference. If you,
I don't know if you were here, Danny,
I'm kidding,
but
I'm kidding.
The fantasy Formula One fantasy like renamed a bunch of stuff to a bunch of random numbers, including our league name. Also tied for first, we have I don't know, man. Valtteri's bad nut. Let's okay. skip Ooh. To 2025.
Oh,
I
no.
need to sour Already. Up. Oh, that's pretty good.
Oh, that's good. I like that. That's good. Yeah.
Kicking Haas and taking names.
Very good. These are great.
Top great. Scorers, Binotto and Steiner Winery.
That's
very good.
Ooh, Steiner Winery works. I like that.
RIP DeVries Visa Cash App, Random Word Salad F1, and this is now off the podium, but I just have to shout this one out. Princess Mono Michael No.
Wow, that is your fucking Ghibli.
Wow.
And
2001
crossover.
Did you see the Toto Wolff quote about Michael Massey, by the way? Holy
oh
shit.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Please pull it up.
Gonna die mad.
Yeah, he is living rent free in his head. Let me look this up. I couldn't believe what
I'll just tell people what it said. It now lives in my head. Him talking about, like, Michael, like, what book was it for? It was for, like,
I think it's Michael Massey's book. I think he might have done a memoir. Was that
I don't know, because no, it was Wolf gave the comment to someone else, but basically
okay, okay.
saying that it, you know, infuriated him what happened in Abu Dhabi, and that Michael Massey is a pure egomaniac. Right? Is that the quote?
Oh, the one that I saw, yeah, pathological egomaniac, I think he called him. Pathological
egomaniac.
But my favorite part one was, I can't find him. I'm trying to find it right now, but it was something along the lines of, like, he's on the other side of the world and nobody thinks about him, he said. the real, like, you know, that for you, that was the day I, you know, destroyed your family, but for me, it was a Tuesday. You know, it was one of those sort of things, yeah. Yeah, wow, we got multiple quotes out of that one, huh?
I think, like, to me, there's a point where you just kind of move on from things, but also it does feel like I've always suspected the thing that has really haunted Wolf about it is that he thinks his mismanagement of the relationship with Massey cost Hamilton that championship.
Right.
The last radio message where Toto, we went racing. We went motor racing. Like, the degree of, like, contempt and anger coming from Massey toward Wolf kind of suggested that something about Wolf had really gotten under Massey's skin, that Wolf did not understand how, like, Mikey, like, didn't understand that relationship was not on, like, a Mikey-Toto footing. And that it kind of blew up in the spectacular fashion at that moment. And I suspect Wolf's always kind of wondered, had he not sort of presumed that much familiarity and always been in Massey's ear, like sort of like begging for rulings, would it have gone differently? Would Massey have wanted to stick it to him by going through Hamilton? I've always suspected like that is actually the thing that bugs Wolf,
especially because that's the type of leader he is, right? Like he's a man manager, you know what I mean? He's CEO F1 guy. He's
right. It's the shit he's supposed to be good at. Yeah. He's managing like high level relationships, and Abu Dhabi, like, say a lot of things happened in that race, but you could say the decisive factor was a high level relationship that Toto Wolf was the caretaker of got fucked up.
I found a quote. He's a totally unimportant person. He lives on the other side of the world and no one is interested in him. He really was a completely pathological egomaniac. Holy shit. Say what you mean.
They can't build a good car anymore because like Toto's like enemy building technique, it's all wrong. Every time he sits down to build an enemy,
yeah,
he just looks up and it's Michael Massey again.
Michael Massey's face is on the... Yeah. Everything always he goes to Australia, he's like, closer to him. Don't like it.
Well, the overall standings in our fantasy league. The top three look like this. In third place, we have the Bonato and Steiner Winery.
Outstanding.
Second place, Valtteri's Bad Nut. And in first place, I Don't Know Man. But I did want to shout out, currently in fifth, we have...
Careful.
Obi Guan Yu Jobi.
Oh,
nice.
That's delicious. Yeah.
Love it. And in 14th place, Signs Point to Wins.
Signs? I'm not getting that one.
Carlos Signs, All Signs Point to
Signs Point
wins.
To Wins. Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay. Yeah, I got it.
All right. Well, you can join our fantasy league. You can also send us an email at shiftf1podcast@gmail.com or go to f1.cool/emails. You can also hit us up on the socials. I now have a link tree.
Ooh,
going.
A link tree.
That's how you know we've made the big time.
Excellent. You can get our Instagram, OnlyFans. Yep. What else we got on there?
All kinds of stuff.
All kinds of good stuff.
And that's us around the internet. Now it's time to take it around the world.
Let's race around the way. Yeah.
I'm glad your doctor didn't tell you. You have to stop saying race around
Can't
the world.
Can't do that. No. Do you know what the weirdest thing is? The main reason, except I was on pain meds and stuff, but the main reason I couldn't talk much was because when they fucking intubate you, because like I'd never had a surgery before, but when they put the pipe down your fucking throat for air, and they take it out, it like fucks your throat up. So I had like a sore throat for like 10 days.
Well, actually,
it's
a weird thing.
Yeah,
I've been intubated. It didn't do that for me.
Oh, did it not?
Which makes me wonder, like, did your system, you know, fight it? Like, did your system, like, did your like
your system was like, no, baby, give me more.
Yeah. Just hey, check this out.
This party trick.
Yeah, exactly. No, but like. It, like, because I had it done, and my throat was a little scratchy. It was like a day.
Right.
It was like, yeah, I feel a little raw, but, like, not, it didn't, I forgot about it until you mentioned that you were, like, right, still having effects days later. So either, like, you were sort of automatically trying to, like, gag on it and not get intubated, or they did a shitty job.
Yeah.
You got the intern. It's just like, get in, damn you.
Stop hammer. Waking up.
Well, we're starting off this weekend on Friday with the Craftsman Trucks at the Texas Motor Speedway for the SpeedyCash.com 250.
Speedy Cash. Is that a payday loan thing?
That sounds like a good outfit.
Yeah, fuck those guys.
Hate that stuff. MotoGP is at the Circuit of the Americas. Formula E is at Misano World Circuit Marco Simoncelli in Italy for the Misano E Prix.
Mm-hmm.
The NASCAR Xfinity Series is also at the Texas Motor Speedway on Saturday for Andy's Frozen Custard.
Oh, I love it. 300. Every time. Every time it happens, I'm like, I got to get me some of that frozen custard.
Motocross Grand Prix is at Cosodromo Ciclamino in Italy.
Ooh.
For the Motocross Grand Prix of Trentino.
Trentino. Totino's Pizza Rolls.
Totino's, yes.
Totino.
My hungry fellas.
Super GT is at the Okoyama International Circuit in Mimisaka, Okoyama Prefecture.
Oh.
The NHRA is at the Strip at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway.
Wow.
In Izu Prefecture.
For the 4-Wide Nationals. And we got NASCAR.
Also, we know custard time. Is it time for custard?
First, we're going to eat custard at the Texas Motor Speedway. Then we're going to go to the Auto Trader Echo Park Automotive 400.
Love it. Fantastic.
Mark Echo. Soothing.
We've run out of all the Echo Park. We've done all the album name. We've done the Mark Echo one. We've done that. I can't. There's no more. I don't have any more Echo Park.
Echo! Echo!
There we go. That was the last Echo Park gig. We're done.
We're done.
And that's the show. Final thoughts, I guess. The conclusion.
Final thoughts, I guess.
It's nice to have you back, Danny.
It's great to be back. We're hanging out in Asia for one more on that side of the world, which is kind of closer to this side of the world in a way. At least us here on the West Coast. We're in China next. We're in China next for the Shanghai International Circuit. First time in a while. Uh-oh. Did we do it last year? This is the first year. No, this is the first time.
First time since 2019.
Yeah. Ooh, that big long straight. Ooh, I wonder if the Red Bulls will overtake on that. Big old straight, longest straight
almost
on the calendar.
Guarantee it.
We'll have to see. And then we're back to Miami for the Florida car park drive. Yeah, I'm just mostly happy to be back in the podcast. Thanks for having me.
Bye, Rob
just disconnected, so I guess he's out. So no point in asking Rob what he thinks. I'm not going to edit him back in, so you might as well just wrap up the podcast. I can pretend to be Rob if you want.
Oh, sure, what do you got?
He always does a pause, see? He always does a little pause for my answer. Yeah. So I got it. That's what that was. He actually has come back. Okay. What are your final thoughts, Rob?
Final thoughts. You know, I think last episode we talked about how Suzuka would be a really informative episode because it's such a pure racetrack. It would really give you an insight of like what's really going on. Like take everything else out, the flukes that have happened, like Red Bull's like, ooh, we're more vulnerable than we've been in the past. And everyone finding ways to plant stories with like different outlets about like Mercedes, I think, is the worst offender this year. Like constantly talking about like cars really coming along. Like it's so much better this year. We're really making progress. We've learned a lot from this. It was revealing. Race. Red Bull just drove away. We did not think about them again. They are in a different category. They drive away, you know, all things being equal, and then you can kind of forget about them. Maybe Sergio shows up because he shuffled back into the pack some point, but like no. It's not competitive. And to a degree, like Ferrari look really also like kind of marooned in the second place.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's no one, doesn't seem like anyone's troubling them for the battle for second.
And are McLaren kind of marooned from Mercedes too? Like, that's the worry, right? Is that we're not, there's no, not much fighting going on here.
Yeah, when you said like 2x2, like good little animals through, at the restart, it kind of feels like that's how finishing order would be as well if you didn't have, like, you know, the variables of various crashes. You know, I think a really revealing thing is Albon can blow the doors off Sargent, you know, on Saturday, but their race pace during a race tends to converge. It's a bit like a Magnussen-Hulkenberg thing. Like, they don't, like, over the long haul, that car just kind of ends up shuffled toward the back. Ocon appears to be decisively having a better season than Gasly. It doesn't matter. They are finishing near each other constantly because the car sucks. So it's kind of a that is kind of the frustrating thing about this race is it did feel like, oh, this is an incredibly deterministic season. Like, people built the car they built, and that's it.
Yeah, although we've seen it before where one team can make a drastic leap in performance in McLaren's case, actually recently. So it is only race, what is this, four? So
yeah, of 24. We'll
see. So. Of 24. I was actually just, so I should have done this years ago. I have a spreadsheet now.
You have a spreadsheet, Drew? You have a spreadsheet?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Channeling some real Williams energy.
With every episode that we're going to post this year, and then what, you know, all the titles will be, so I can just copy and paste. But by writing all these out, I have now, first of all, there's two week gaps. There's the summer break, and then there's another one at the beginning of October, and then another gap in the beginning of November, which is interesting. But also the
Russia.
Yeah. The hardest episodes for us are the back to back ones where we have to talk about a race that happened and then do the pre race. There are 1, 2, 3 times where that happens twice in a row.
Oh, great. We're never going to answer emails ever again.
No.
That's what I've learned.
Yeah. So
madness.
Get ready for that. There's a lot of Formula One coming up, and a lot of things can happen. Hey, it could happen.
It could. Hey, keep listening. It could happen. Although, to Rob's point, if we're saying that the longer the cars are out there, the more they sort of shuffle into the entropy, sort of shuffles them into their deterministic positions, then the more races you have, the more that's going to happen too. So, but hey, look, you're the hardcore fan. You're here. You're still listening. You're not one of those fucking, you know, fly by night, you know, only on sunny days fans. You're here through thick and thin. That's how you're a real F1 fan. When you suffered through the Schumacher years or the Vettel years or the Hamilton years or the Verstappen years, that's where you earn your fucking pinstripes. So we're glad you're here. And if you leave, you're dead to us.
Well, on that note, thanks everybody for listening. If you'd like to support the show and get access to all of our bonus episodes, the ad-free version of the podcast, and the official Shift F1 Discord, you can do so over at patreon.com/shiftf1. Have a good race weekend, everyone. We will see you all next week.